Today is Monday, April 8th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros, and we've got a big solar eclipse today. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating and send us your thoughts via email, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We'd love to hear from you. We're all here together getting through the news of the cray, as we call it, each and every weekday, bright and early. And joining me today, Billy Hallowell. And Billy, we got a lot coming up. Of course, the solar eclipse. And also on the Focus story, you caught up with a spokesperson for Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, Tal Heinrich. We chatted with her a couple of times now. We had a chance in the midst of everything going on with calls for a ceasefire and all of that to really get her perspective and to hear directly from Israel, and really, really interesting responses.
Yeah, looking forward to the details there. On the main thing, Madison Seals is looking at the Chosen Conference, which is addressing the critical needs in foster care and adoption. Important conversation there. That's all coming up. On the main thing, don't forget to make sure to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, DC Debrief with John Stolness, Billy's Newsmakers with a full-length interview each and every weekday. You can subscribe via the links in the description of this podcast episode. So make sure you go ahead and do that. All right, time to head over to the news in 90 seconds. Caitlin Clark and Iowa fell short yesterday of their ultimate goal, falling to undefeated South Carolina, who has dominated the past few seasons in women's college basketball. Ratings were through the roof this year for the women's tournament. Caitlin Clark's historic career at Iowa ended as the Hawkeyes were unable to upset South Carolina. They fell 87-75. Clark did have 30 points, but it wasn't enough to get the win. The men's championship matchup is tonight, featuring UConn and Purdue, both number one seeds, and the best two teams all year. That should be a great matchup. All right, today is the solar eclipse. And so when it passes over the United States, one of the best places to see it might just be the Amistad National Recreation Area in South Texas. It's one of the few national park sites that's directly in the path, and people have started camping out days in advance to make sure they got a spot there. And it's going to put on a big display across parts of Mexico and United States and Canada. It'll be visible to 32 million people in the U.S. who live along the path of totality, where you'll see the moon entirely block the sun, but 99% of people will at least be able to see a partial blockage of the sun. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. Billy, weather is going to play a big factor in this eclipse today because, while, yeah, a lot of people in theory will be able to see it, places like Vermont, Maine, and Canada, they're forecast today for a sunny day. Clouds are a problem when you have something like an eclipse, because if you got thick cloud cover, well, you're going to miss it. And unfortunately, clouds are forecast for much of the eclipse route through the U.S. with some patches and clear skies. So people are going to be on the lookout. Do you have big plans for this today, or are you going to hide your eyes?
I mean, not to be a party pooper.
Oh, no,
okay. I mean, like, let me just go there. Okay. Yeah. Like, okay. Is it interesting? Yeah. Is it kind of cool? Yeah. But you would think that, I don't even know. I mean, it's just the level to which people are camping out for this. I don't know. I'll stop there. I think it's cool. Like, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I'm going to go, and I have the glasses, you know, everyone's got the glasses, mainly because I'm afraid I'll burn my retinas if I don't. But I'm going to check it out. It's almost shocking to me how into it people are. You know what I mean? I mean, there are towns that are creating festivals around it where my parents live there in the direct, you know, 100% pathway of this thing. And you would think it was like the most exciting day in the history of mankind. You really would.
Right. Like,
so, getting, yeah, I'm a party pooper, I guess.
Dangerously close to sun and moon worship here. But you do have, I mean, look, we had here in the Northeast, we had an earthquake on Friday, and or was it on Friday? Yeah, it was Friday.
We're both survivors of that.
Both survivors. Yeah. I know. My favorite meme on these earthquakes, we small ones we get, are when people say I survived, and they show a picture of the lawn chair tipped over. And to be honest with you, it's not even, I don't even think it could knock over a lawn chair, but it is freaky to hear, to have the ground shake and alarming. Rumble like that. It is. Cause like you hear the low rumble and you're like, what is that? Is a train running through my house? And then your feet are shaking. And it was definitely, I mean, I've felt a few of these smaller earthquakes, and that was probably one of the bigger ones that we've had on that front. But I bring it up because you have the earthquake and then you got the eclipse coming, and that stirs oftentimes a lot of end times talk for people. Cause I mean, of course, wars and rumors of wars are happening as well. So you see all these things happening and people start talking.
Well, yeah. And I mean, look, the biggest one, and we're going to talk about it in a bit, obviously, is Israel, Iran, what's going on in the Middle East. You have that going on at the same time too. And of course, I'm not saying we're at the absolute end of days, but when you have the Bible talking about a lot of these events and they're happening, they're all coalescing, all these random things are coalescing at the same time. Yeah, people start to talk, and the culture and where we are and what's going on, whether it's 500 years away, 2,000 years away, or 12 minutes, you know, it wouldn't shock me in any of those scenarios at this point. So I think the eclipse does add to that, especially, as you said, a couple of days after the earthquake. So we're living in very interesting times, Dan Andros.
Yes, we are. Absolutely. Indeed. No doubt about it. But make sure you protect your eyes if you go out there. Like you said, you're wearing glasses. And I don't really know what the science is on that. I'm not a scientist, but you only get one set of eyes here. So be careful with them. Don't go staring at the sun here and the moon all afternoon.
Based on how we handled COVID, you know, follow that science,
right?
You know, take the guidance into account.
Don't put a mask over your eyes. That's not going to work. So, all right, let's head over to the focus story here. And as we talked about at the top here, a spokesperson for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel is fighting to stay alive. And they responded to what might happen if America changes its position on Israel and Gaza. And as we saw, President Biden has given Israel some harsh words lately. So what's the story here?
Yeah, you know, we had a chance to catch up with Tal Heinrich. She's a spokesperson for Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel, for his office there in Israel. And she told me that Israel is fighting to stay alive, as you said, trying to secure the nation. And we talked specifically about the international community, because when you have people putting pressure on Israel and all different countries around the world, obviously a lot of questions emerge in that. And, you know, look, nobody's perfect, right? So when things are happening, this idea that people might need to be reined in, or maybe there needs to be more humanitarian aid. So we talk through some of that. But specifically on the international front, she said a couple of very interesting things. She said, when you're fighting a war, you want moral clarity, you want global support on your side, but we're not fighting for support. We're fighting to stay alive. We're fighting so that we can have a better future in the region for us and for the Palestinians, should they choose the path of peace. And I thought that was interesting. And then she went on to say, so with or without international support, including American support, we will do what has to be done, because we will not die. We will not commit public suicide. We will fight a war that must be fought for our survival. And I thought that was an interesting response, because at the end of the day, what Israel is saying is, we don't really care. You know, of course, we welcome the support and we want America and others to support us. But if people are going to pull back, it will not change the fact that we will not commit, which she called, again, public suicide. We're going to continue our fight. And so that was interesting, because, of course, the comments come, as you were saying, after, you know, U.S. President Joe Biden putting some more pressure on Netanyahu. And by the way, Netanyahu responded very quickly to that pressure by changing some things, right? So so it seems to have been effective, the pressure, in some ways.
Right. I mean, look, it does matter. I mean, the U.S. is still, even with Biden's rhetoric, they're still providing weapons and things of that nature to assist Israel. So just from a strictly logistical standpoint, I'm sure they're taking those things into consideration because of the help that they are getting. What did Heinrich say about the possibility of a ceasefire? Because that's one of the things we hear at Biden administration officials continually calling for here.
Yeah, she was very clear on this, because this idea of a ceasefire, we're seeing it, you know, come from all different facets, some of them in the Democratic Party right now, because there's an election in a few months too. Let's keep that in mind. And if we're honest, the public is turning on Israel a little bit, even the American public. Some of the polling shows people are not happy with what's going on in the war right now. Now, she said there wouldn't be any sort of ceasefire that, quote, keeps the hostages in Gaza and Hamas in power. So right there, there are two things. They want everybody returned home. And I believe there's still around 100 or so. We don't really know how many are alive, but hostages who are still in captivity for 6 months now, and then not allowing Hamas to stay in power. Right. So it used to be eradicating Hamas, and maybe I have that wrong, but I mean, it sounded like the goal was, you know, eradicate Hamas. Now it is get them out of power. There are some challenges there as well. You know, we saw polling a while back showing that people in the West Bank and Gaza, some of them didn't even know that October 7th was real. They hadn't seen the videos. And so I've heard some saying that the popularity of Hamas has actually increased in these areas. So getting them out of power is going to be a challenge. But she said that, you know, it's unacceptable for the hostages to stay there. She said, we took this decision as a nation that we will not live next to a terrorist enclave. We defined very clear war objectives that Hamas must be gone. So there's that proclamation again. And that Gaza can never pose a terror threat to us again. So understandable, they don't want to live next to a terrorist organization anymore. And I think October 7th drove home the dangers of that for Israel.
Yeah, and you talk about the support waning, and we know a lot of the far leftist activists are always going to be criticizing Israel because of their pro-Palestine sort of stance that they have. We're also seeing a bit of a fracture on the right, which is interesting. You have people saying, hey, if you are Israel first, you're not America first. And I've seen that kind of mantra across the internet, you know, on X and other places, people having that conversation. So that's an interesting one to watch too, as well, to see critics on the right creeping up, which is usually a safe haven. Usually you get support from among Christians on Israel for obvious reasons. So that's something to look out for too. But what did Heinrich warn about Hamas and this message that the world is sending basically the terrorist organization by these stances that people are taking?
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, she and we've heard this from a number of people now. We actually had somebody else on who recently said the same thing. But you know, her view is that when there's international pressure being placed on Israel and you don't hear the pressure being placed as much on Hamas, that it's actually telling Hamas that their strategies are working, right? If you can isolate Israel, if you can make Israel the enemy, she said they want to maximize the civilian suffering and civilian casualties in Gaza because they want Israel to take the fire for their vile actions and methods of war, that they will use civilians, urban structures as shields. We have seen, obviously, the tunnels under hospitals, and they want the international pressure to be used as leverage against Israel in a way that will let them stay in power, live another day, and carry out another October 7th massacre. So a lot of interesting conversation there, but I think the biggest piece is that, hey, by doing this, by putting the pressure on Israel, and of course, look, if there does need to be areas that need to improve, that's something that needs to be talked about, right? Humanitarian aid, those sorts of things. But by putting the pressure on Israel, you're actually sending Hamas a message that their strategy is working.
Yeah. I mean, even Chris Cuomo had a viral monologue or segment over the weekend talking about Israel and saying essentially that what happens when you criticize Israel constantly. And look, like you said, it's not that they can't do anything wrong, but look at how the difference is on how the world reacts to something like those aid workers that got killed by an Israeli strike unintentionally. And this blame gets foisted on Israel, and they did take action. They removed those leaders who were responsible for that strike. They removed them from the army. I think they fired them basically and put them out. So you see actions taken like that. But then when all of the criticism on that falls on Israel, as Cuomo pointed out, this wouldn't be happening if Hamas didn't essentially declare war on Israel and launch a massive terrorist attack. This wouldn't be happening if Israel or if Hamas would return the hostages for 6 months. You have 100 plus hostages there for 6 months. And like you said, all the blame gets foisted on Israel, and Hamas has got to be sitting there going, this is great. They're blaming them. And we started this and we want them to get in trouble. And this is exactly what we want. The pressure should be on Hamas. The Biden administration should be putting this pressure on Hamas. Where is the pressure to release these hostages. Where is it's been 6 months. Six months. And you hear a peep about these hostages from the Biden administration.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm a little fired up about it because how many Hamas officials have been fired for their actions?
Yeah. Right?
No, their actions have been rewarded. Their actions have been heralded. Their actions have been, they invaded and raped and killed and did these things intentionally because that's what their war strategy is. Right. And so for us to be sitting here and of course, again, not excusing bad behavior or things that shouldn't happen or starving people intentionally, if those are things that are really happening, they have to be dealt with. But these are things that happen in the fog of war. Hamas's entire strategy is to kill, pillage, isolate, and by the way, destroy all of Israel. You know, it's been said that if Israel laid down their arms, they'd be destroyed. If Hamas laid down their arms, there'd be peace. And so that is a very telling proclamation, and I think it's true. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, no nation, I mean, certainly not America, would demand of itself what they're demanding Israel do right now in a situation where we had hundreds of hostages still captive 6 months later, 6+ months later. You just wouldn't see anyone doing that. It would be political suicide, yet this is what the administration is demanding of Israel. So that's how it's going right now. Appreciate that update, Billy, and we'll, of course, continue on this story on cbnnews.com and faithwire.com. You can check out all the updates there. We will certainly have more of those in the days to come. So appreciate you bringing that to the podcast today. All right, we are going to head over to the main thing now. And the Chosen Conference is an emergency summit addressing foster care and adoption needs for vulnerable children. And it's coming up on April 13th at Prestonwood Baptist Church. Associate Pastor Jeremiah Johnston joined Madison Seals to discuss how the church can and should fill this great need. That's today's main thing.
Jeremiah, can you tell me more about what the upcoming Chosen Conference at your church is really all about?
Absolutely, Madison. We're thrilled that on April 13, we're hosting an emergency summit for Christians of all denominations who care about the crisis right now in our country. That is 400,000 children in the foster care system. The most unreached people group in the world right now are kids in America's foster care system, and we want to be part of the solution. So on April 13, we're hosting the Chosen Conference. We have some incredible speakers. We have 50 ministries that are partnering with us to help resource, equip, engage, and educate anyone who's interested in being part of the solution for adoption and foster care in the United States.
Yeah, and this Chosen Conference is going to be held at your church, Prestonwood Baptist Church. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. It's a one-day conference. We have people that are coming in from all over America, right here to Dallas, where God has a second home, Madison. We're happy to be having so many people interested. We're also streaming the conference. So for those that are listening right now, and you can't make it to North Texas on April 13, you can stream from wherever you are in the world, wherever you're listening to this podcast, because this is not a Texas issue. It's not one state. It truly is a national crisis. And that's why we're hosting this emergency summit. We have 400,000 children right now in America's foster care system. 100,000 right now, Madison, are available for adoption right now, waiting for their forever family. We have 400,000 congregations in the United States. And if every church would step up, like Preston would, and have some kind of adoption and foster care ministry, we really think we could see this problem reduced, if not eliminated altogether.
Yeah, wow, that really puts the problem and a solution into perspective. Why was this event started in the first place, and how did you specifically get involved in it?
We want to give hope. You know, Christians, we believe the church, we are the people who give hope. You can't find hope anywhere except through the truth of Jesus Christ, his word, and his people, the people of God. And so we wanted to do this to empower local churches. This is crucial to establish adoption and foster care ministries within their own churches and communities. We also want to engage all believers. I think there's an awareness problem of this issue. You know, if I don't know there's a problem, how am I going to be part of the solution? And so Madison, we really want to engage all believers to understand their role in supporting adoption and foster care. You might be listening right now and you're like, hey, I'm in my 60s or 70s. I can't, you know, there's no way I can bring a child into our home. But you know what? There's other ways that you can be involved in turning back the tide of what I believe is the most unreached people group in the world, kids in our foster care system. We also want to equip and encourage families right now who are either adopting or willing to adopt. They're fostering or they're willing to foster. These families need hope and encouragement. There's a lot of education that's needed. And what I appreciate about this conference is I don't have to just go to Google. I can come to a one-day emergency summit with these 50 ministry partners, and I'm going to have about 6 months worth of education in one day of a conference if I'm really serious about being engaged in adoption and foster care and seeing this problem eliminated. You're going to have so much help and information and encouragement. And that's why I'm also so thankful for the incredible speakers that are joining us as well for the conference.
Yeah, and I do want to ask about those speakers here and where people can find out more here in a minute, but I want to talk more about the goals of this event, because as you've stated, the crisis that this event is addressing is a huge one. Currently, more than 250,000 children are entering our nation's foster care system each year. Mm-hmm. So that's just compounding on those numbers that you just mentioned.
Right.
And after
right.
Roe versus Wade was overturned, we've seen a decrease in abortions nationwide, praise the Lord. But that also
right.
means that there's probably more of a need for Christians to come alongside mothers who choose life but are not
Absolutely.
In a position to parent the child. So can you talk more about what the role of the church should be in foster care and adoption, and specifically why that is a Christian calling?
Historically, it is, and I can say this as a New Testament scholar, it has always been the church, local churches, the faith community who have led the way in caring for the vulnerable populations. This has been seen in Christianity founding hospitals, orphanages, universities, care ministries, long before local governments got involved or even cared to get involved. And studies have shown that the people of faith, people who love Jesus Christ, are far more likely to foster and adopt. Isn't that interesting? That people of faith are the most open to caring for a, quote, unwanted child. And again, we want to abolish that as any kind of motto. We believe every child is a wanted child. This is the gospel. This is Mark chapter 9, Madison. Jesus brought a child in the room, and he put the child in the middle of the room when he's teaching his disciples. And he said, the kingdom of heaven is like one of these children receiving one of these children. And we believe that that set a model for us, that Jesus Christ cares for all life from the womb to the tomb. And with the increase of pregnancies and births, of course, we want to see the church step up and say, hey, we want to help these mothers who need help, and they do need our help. And so immediate next steps is what we're going to equip you with at the Chosen Conference. What are your immediate next steps? We're going to help financially. We're going to help educate you. And we're going to help raise the awareness for all the pastors who are coming as well. And I'm seeing some really encouraging, heartening examples in churches across the country right now who do step up in this area. We have clusters of churches that are actually partnering and even outpacing government offices and caring for this crisis. I love it. And that's what the church is here for. We're the greatest force for good on planet Earth. And so I'm praying that we're going to see an incredible outpouring of God's Spirit on April 13th, equipping people to step up where they're needed in America's foster care and adoption crisis.
Yeah, that's so well said, because I think the adoption and foster care issue for a lot of people can seem kind of impersonal, or it can seem intimidating because it's so unfamiliar to us. But it really does change our perspective when we consider the fact that we ourselves are adopted
That's
into
right.
the body of Christ. We're adopted children of Christ. And that gives us a more compassionate heart, because we can relate to that feeling. And we know how it is to be shown mercy and grace and to be loved by someone who is not our own, but who loves us as his own. So
That's
I
right.
love the way that you said that. And can you talk a little bit about some of the speakers at the conference and how they kind of relate to this issue, or why this is personal for them?
Corey Robertson from the Duck Dynasty family, her daughter Sadie Robertson. Adoption is very near and dear to their hearts, so they're going to be live in person sharing. Of course, Governor Greg Abbott of the state of Texas, very involved in adoption in his own family. Dr. Jack Graham, our senior pastor, Scott Turner, Greg Mott from Houston's First, Shane and Casey Pruitt are going to be here. We're so excited about these main stage speakers, because all of them have a heart for adoption. They've either adopted or foster cared in their own family. They have incredible redemption stories that are going to be so inspirational. And I'm just as excited about all the breakout sessions and the 50 ministry partners that we have that get very specific and technical into the different areas of need related to both adoption and foster caring for families.
Yeah, that's a great lineup. I'm sure our listeners have heard of at least one, if not all of those that you mentioned. Where can people find out more about this and also find the live stream that you mentioned?
Absolutely. So we need you to register. If you go to prestonwood.org/chosen, that's prestonwood.org/chosen, you're going to find the registration details. You can register and indicate if you'd like to attend in person or if you'd like to stream the conference. You're going to read more information about our pillars of hope, the breakout sessions, the schedules, the speaker bios, and how you can be part of what is, I hope and pray, an exciting vanguard of a new movement in local churches, standing up and being counted and saying, yes, we're pro-life, and that means we care about foster kids and adopted kids too.
Yes, amen. Well, Jeremiah, thank you so much for spearheading this and sharing about it on the podcast today. Really appreciate your work.
Madison, thank you for having me, and thanks so much for helping us raise awareness.
All right, Madison, thanks so much for bringing that one to the podcast today on this Monday. That's going to leave us with time here for one last thing.
2 Corinthians 13:8, for we cannot do anything against the truth, but only for the truth. We talked about a lot of truth issues today and the importance of just remembering that our emotions cannot trump the truth. The truth is the truth.
Yeah, and look, it sounds easy, but obviously people are having a lot of trouble with the truth these days. They're just societal pressures oftentimes, you know, convince people to cave on critical issues and abandon the truth. So a good call for us and a good reminder for us to hold fast to the truth and play for an audience of one. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of the Quick Start Podcast. As always, thanks so much for being here. Make sure you get on over to cbnnews.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise. We shall return tomorrow with more. God bless. See you then.